Hey, it's Brendo, and I'm pretty thrilled because the Black Keys are back, baby. Their 10th studio record is titled Delta Cream. It is out May 14th, and I am joined by Black Keys drummer Patrick Carney on the line. Pat, how are you travelling, brother?
I'm good, man. How are you doing?
Wonderful, wonderful. Thank you. A pleasure to talk to you. 10 studio records in. You're taking it right back to your roots. The album essentially a covers record of your favourite Mississippi Hill country blues tracks. What sparked the idea for that particular project?
Well, it was pretty much an accident, but our whole band has been an accident, essentially. I should just give you, like, the whole background to this music and to Dan and I is that we grew up in the same neighborhood in Akron, Ohio, like a couple of houses from each other. And we were a year apart and at different grades. So we weren't like friends, you know, we were just like acquaintances. And one day we realized that we both were listening to this music that none of our other friends were listening to. It was like, so then we kind of formed this friendship and we started trying to play music. And then, you know, we stopped playing, we went to college, and I kept playing. We both kept playing music, but I was playing guitar. You know, One day Dan called me and asked me if I would do a recording of his bar band, and I said sure. And he came over, and the other dudes never showed up. And I said, dude, let's reschedule. And he said, no, man, like, you should go play drums. And I was like, dude, I'm terrible. I don't know how to play the drums. And he said, it's probably gonna make it sound better. So we went, and the first song we recorded was Do the Rump. And we did 5 other R.L. Burnside covers that day. And then that was it. Dan took the recordings. The next day he called me and said, we should start a band. And we started a band. And so I accidentally became a drummer playing this music. And so if it weren't for this music, the band wouldn't exist. You know what I mean? So what happened here with this record was Dan was making a record for this artist on his record label, Easy Eye. And the artist's name is Robert Finley. And for this album, he asked 2 musicians from Mississippi to come up and play with him. Kenny Brown, who's played with R.L. Burnside and Junior Kimbrough, and Eric Deaton, who's also played with those guys. And they cut the record like 3 days faster than they were anticipating. Dan called me on like a Tuesday night and said, do you want to come in a day and play with Kenny Brown and Eric? And I said, of course, because I never got to play with those guys. So I went down and we jammed and we like ate some cheeseburgers and told stories. And before you know it, like in 6 hours, we had 9 songs done. So then we decided to come back the next day and do a couple more. And that was it. The record was accidentally made. And we just kind of put it on a shelf. We did this like right before COVID. This is December of 2019. And then around August or so of 2020, we reassessed the record and we're like, this is pretty dope. We should put it out. And that's kind of what happened. And it just felt fitting to us, like, you know, in the height of, you know, everything that's going on in 2020, Black Lives Matter, all kinds of stuff politically. It was important for us to highlight these guys who changed our lives. And we had done a proper tribute EP, but it was 16 years ago when they recorded it. So it felt like it was time to put this out. And we have Kenny and Eric playing on it. And it's the first record where we actually cut completely live, because, you know, Dan and I are a 2-piece band. So when we make records, we always add bass, but it's an overdub. And we always add some lead guitar, but it's an overdub. So this was all cut live. And it has that feeling. The feeling really permeates through the record.
Well, this is the thing. You know, this is what I wanted to raise there. I mean, the first, you know, I got through Crawling Kingsnake, and it just felt like I was sitting on a dusty leather couch in the, you know, corner of your studio for an hour just listening to you guys jam. And I assume that was the feeling you wanted.
Well, that's the thing that struck me when I went back and listened to it months after we did it. It was like, oh shit, I haven't seen a concert in months. No one has. And this is what the concert sounds like. So that's kind of where it also felt like, oh yeah, after 2020, maybe this is something maybe some people need to hear.
Yeah. So you mentioned a whole bunch of stuff I really want to unpack, because I was always wondering, you know, because a 2-piece on the surface, or ostensibly to me, seems like a shit ton of effort because, I mean, you're trying to, you know, make up for all this space that that only two people can fill. But it makes a lot of sense after you said that because, you know, when you're kids, I mean, you said you're only a year apart, but when you, who's older, you or Dan?
I am emotionally, but Dan is physically.
And when you, like, you know, when you feel that connection with a kid, you know, a year older when you're that young, it sort of feels like you've got this relationship with someone 10 years older. So it would make sense that you stay together so long. And when you form a connection so early, I can see how it's only been strengthened during your time together. Is that fair?
Yeah, we've been through some stuff. But, I mean, you know, he's like an older brother to me.
Mm.
You know, and I think I'm definitely, you know, I'm like a brother to him. And the thing is like you know, part of this, yeah, the two piece thing is you bond really hard and it's part of it. It's like, there's this thing called the Dunning-Kruger effect, which is like, basically if you're not good at something, you don't realize you're not good at it. And, it can actually be beneficial. And I think that like, we were so not good at it, we didn't realize it and we never gave up. And so we eventually got good, I guess, or something. But that's the thing about that paradox, is that it actually can be beneficial because it makes you not want to give up.
That's it. And I would assume, and correct me if I'm wrong, over, you know, your multiple albums, you've just been sort of collaborating together. You mentioned, you know, you've got your heroes in the room, Kenny Brown and Eric Deaton from those respective bands you mentioned. Was it a more of a collaborative effort between four people this time instead of two? And did that change the process and how you, you know, look at making music?
Yeah, I mean, it's fully collaborative. I mean, you know, Sam Baca, the percussionist, you know, played just as important role as anybody. But, you know, this music, it's the cool thing about this thing is that I think Dan and I are both, like, very nuanced musicians. Like, there isn't, like, a technical grace. It is, like, there's something else. You know, there's, like, the flaws, the right kind of flaws are kind of what we're looking for. And Eric and Kenny are the same type of player. You know, it's like my favorite type of musician is like when you can hear like someone sit down and play like the drums and like, oh, that's so and so. You know, like with the minute you hear like, you know, when Jack White play the guitar, you know, it's Jack White.
Yeah.
The minute you hear Eddie Van Halen, you know, it's like, I think that, you know, I look for that in a musician. And I think everybody that's on this record has that type of thing happening. There's like, and so because of it, in fact, we're making this loose blues music, it's even more exaggerated, you know, brought to the forefront, which makes the record feel really, I think, extra live.
Yeah. So. But also it's a credit to you and Dan as well, because I mean, they are covers, but as you said, you put the record on, you know, it's a Black Keys record. You know what I mean?
That's the idea.
Yeah.
That's the idea.
And I feel like there's this real intention with the album opener, Crawling Kingsnake, and it is the single. Pretty much if you're expecting anything other than this dirty blues record, you are shit out of luck. Was that the intention with that one?
Yeah, you know, we sent the recordings to Chad Blake, who's the guy that mixes. He's mixed all of our records since Brothers, and he's just a true artist. And, you know, he's a true collaborator with us, too. And so we sent him everything unedited, you know, like, the tails and everything were on the song, and he sent back, one of the first songs he sent back was Crawling Kingsnake, and it, you know, he left everything on. Dan, me asking Dan if he's ready, and him saying yes, and then the bass and the drums, and it from the minute Chad said it back uncut, it was like, oh yeah, okay, that's what this record is. It's gonna be like a live set, and that song has to be first.
Yeah, great choice. And it is. There's this real warmth as well to it that I absolutely love. And as you're celebrating the release of your 10th studio record, it's also 10 years since El Camino came out as well. Looking back at that a decade on, how do you view that record?
That whole window of time of 2010 to 2012, you know, I remember being very stressed during that time because I was putting all this pressure on myself and I was experiencing all these things I hadn't experienced before. And my dad was like, you need to try to enjoy it because it's probably never going to happen again. And at that moment when he said that, I was like, oh, he's right. This is probably never going to happen again. But it was cool to live through that. You know, it's cool to managed to stay a band through that. It's cool that, 19 years to the day of the release of our first record, we're putting out a tribute to the guys that got us playing in the first place, which I think is cool.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, you had your biggest hits on that El Camino record. Of course, I've been listening, since the Starp Brothers, Rubber Factory, all that sort of business. But I mean, you'd be universally recognized by Lonely Boy, Gold on the Ceiling. What is it, do you think, about those songs that spark such a universal connection?
You know, we were deep in the zone when we were at that spot. We saw, when we made Brothers, we both had just turned 30. And it was like, when you turn 30, like, you think you're old. And then you turn 40 and you wish you were 30. But, it felt like we've been doing this for a long time. We have to take it to the next level, see what can happen. And it accidentally worked. Somehow it fucking worked. And then we were playing these big shows for the first time. And when we ended up canceling a Big Day Out tour because we were just so exhausted in early 2011. And we didn't know what to do with ourselves, really. So we just went back into the studio and started making more songs for another record with Danger Mouse. And he was like, guys, like the next time you go on tour, it's going to be arenas. And you can't play like a song like Too Afraid to Love You. Like you can't play like five songs like that in an arena. People are going to fall asleep. You need to have something faster.
Yeah.
And that's where those songs came from. But like literally that was the challenge. It was like Danger Mouse is like, let's write some faster songs.
Do you regret canceling that Big Day Out tour only because obviously just after that Big Day Out stopped as a festival. It was one of my favorite festivals. I was so keen to see you guys live. And in hindsight, fuck you, man, because I really wanted to see you, and now Big Day Out doesn't exist. Had you played that festival before?
We never played it. We never got asked to play it. And I think one of the reasons we canceled it is because the deal was so shitty. It was like... I think the Stooges were playing it, and that was one of the things that like we wanted to go play with us every day. That and I also love Australia, but we were just so fried, man.
Yeah,
like, we were so fried, and that's the thing. We kind of had this. Our kind of MO for the band up through like 2015 essentially was like if we get asked to do something like. We can't say no because it's an opportunity. And we were really easily persuaded by agents and stuff like that. And like, we ended up going to Europe like three times in 2010 to the point where we're just like fried.
Yeah.
And so the one place we get to go was Australia. And still to this day, we've only ever played one show in Japan. I mean, that's crazy. Cause every time we're supposed to go to Japan, it's at the end of a tour and we're just so fried. We just don't go.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Yeah.
We need to get to Japan and we need to get to Australia. We haven't been in 8.5 years.
Well, yeah. And, I'm sure you would have been here sooner if not for, that pandemic. But hopefully that'll dissipate next year. Hopefully you'll be back here because Delta Cream is a masterpiece. Thank you on behalf of everyone for introducing us, to these songs because I've gone back and, also listened to them in their original form as well. And it's just a wonderful sort of... gateway into that sort of stuff. So thank you for that. It's out May 14, Delta Cream by the Black Keys. Patrick Carney, if and when you do come back, please come and have a beer with me because you're wonderful. Thank you.
I love it. I love it, man. Thanks for talking to me.